Guess who just showed up? My amazing guest. So, gosh, I have this great Olympia. I'm going to put you on camera while I'm talking about you. She grew up local here in LA, in South Central. And from South Central to being a rocket scientist, she helped launch the NASA Endeavour. Here's her book as I'm talking with her. She helped launch Discovery, Atlantis Space Shuttle. I mean, it sounds like something a movie should be made about, right? AKA Hidden Figures. I have the modern day Hidden Figures here, a figure in my radio station. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here, and yeah. I'm so happy to be in your studio.
I know.
This is great.
This is so awesome. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to prop this up here for now, and because I want to focus. And all right, so the rest of our listeners, you can go to kpfk.org and you can listen to the show, or from my Facebook fans, which is great. And it's been great joining you guys on Facebook. Okay. I want to focus on you for now. I have a deep admiration for what you have been through.
Thank you.
Have just, and what you've done with your life, and the example that you lead and that you set. And from math, can we just start there?
Well, most people struggle with mathematics.
Tell me a little bit about your story. I mentioned it briefly, but where were you raised? What point did you realize what you wanted to do?
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here on the show, and I'm excited to tell my own specific story about how I overcame my own challenges. For those of you that do not know, I am Olympia Lapointe. I am a modern-day hidden figure, as what People magazine says, and that was like so amazing.
Yes.
I helped launch 28 missions to space with a group of wonderful scientists in the rocket science world, Columbia, Endeavour, Atlantis, and Discovery space shuttles. And I won various awards, and I was so thankful because I started doing that at the age of 21. And I was definitely in this world of greatness, but I failed so many different things.
My Facebook Live is going off. Hang on.
I failed so many things I failed mathematics. I failed algebra. I failed geometry, calculus, and chemistry. I failed those. And what was happening is that I was going through emotional turmoil at home. And it was because of where I was growing up. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and it was an area that was highly gang violent. We lived in poverty. And it was all the stresses of trying to just make sure you could survive in that environment. The last thing you really had the opportunity to do was study.
Study.
Yeah. That was like the last thing on your concern list. And I realized that for myself, when those educational issues came up, it was because I was facing emotional issues at home I didn't know how to handle. And when it came to mathematics, and when I had to actually solve those problems in mathematics, mathematics is like the one subject in school where you have to use your frontal brain lobes in order to solve the problems. And if we do not use that, we can't transport a problem into a solution. So typically when students start doing not doing well in their mathematics courses, that means that something typically emotionally is happening where they can't turn on their frontal brain lobe in order for them to solve problems.
Oh, I never thought about that that way.
Yeah, and I was just talking to my friend about that, and she has a 9-year-old son, and I told her, you know, what's happening emotionally? And she goes, oh, something's happening.
Yeah.
And she realized what it was.
Yeah, see, I look at math and say, why? Why do we need to know 8x plus 1 to the second power equals 3? Well, I don't understand why. I don't know if I've ever used algebra in my life. Of course, I wouldn't have because I didn't do well in it. But do you have a math brain?
I think everyone has a math brain. Whether or not it's developed, that's a question. Logically, people intuitively know things. Like, for example, if you were to go to the corner grocery store and you were to get toothpaste that was $1, let's say, and then floss that was $2, and then let's say mouthwash that was $3. In any way that you add that up, it's going to be $6,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you add it up in a different way, we still expect to get $6. Let's say if the person rings it up like the toothpaste and then the mouthwash and then the other product, you're still going to get that. And that's actually a concept in mathematics that is intuitively locked into us, and it's called the associative property of addition. And so people would know if something doesn't seem right. And our brains actually naturally have that ability. But sometimes we shut it off. And we shut it off
when we experience
fear. it's amazing. In the book, Mathophobia, and Mathophobia is my book, and it's geared for people to understand how to tackle mathematics. And the book is completely written in English, and it's a study guide to help people change the way that they think about the sciences. And it's amazing because in the second chapter, I talk about math made real, and the adults sometimes do not understand the mathematics. Like, for example, Madoff. The Madoff scandal. Mm-hmm. There was millions of people that lost billions of dollars. It wasn't just millions.
Right.
It was billions of dollars.
Yes.
And Steven Spielberg said that he was even a part of that.
I know people that were lost their life savings.
Yes. And what was most fascinating is when I started reading the studies is that the fraudulent mathematics that was being seen was that there were charts that had a steady 10% growth increase every single year, when mathematically that was impossible. But if they knew how to understand what the charts were saying,
wow,
that would have been a telltale sign that the mathematics that was being presented wasn't representing what was happening in real life. And so when we look at mathematics and science as not just something that's in a book, but understanding that it's actually a real type of phenomenon, it's a language that represents real phenomenon that's happening on in real life, we see, okay, do the numbers match up to what's really happening? So if I go to that corner store and if the total adds up to $11, is this right? So the mathematics and the science is a validation of what we are seeing happening in front of us.
How are you able to say this? Because you didn't have a relationship with it at one point and then that changed?
Oh, gosh. Thank you for asking me. I love your questions. This is so cool.
I want to know. I do.
When I was 6 years old, I went to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and it was a field trip. And when we went there, it was amazing. I saw these big... Oh, I always remember it. I was on the school bus, and I remember looking out the window, and I saw this plane, and the teacher said, "Do you know what those are called?" And I said, "Who knows?" The teacher says, "Who knows?" And I raised my hand. I said, "Those are jets." And I saw these big jet engines. And then later on, we went into this room, and it was so dark. And I remember going and looking on the walls, and everything was just so amazing to my six-year-old brain. And I saw these pictures of these men who were launching rockets on the wall. And I thought to myself, I want to be just like those men. I want to be just like those men. Now, I'm not quite sure if you know what I look like.
I am not a man.
Yeah, I am definitely not a man. And I do not fit the stereotypical type of person that you would think that would be
a rocket scientist
and that you think of. People, when they look at my picture, the first thing they think of is
supermodel.
Athlete or supermodel or like,
I read your comments. Yeah. I mean, first of all, Olympia Lapointe has a great TEDx talk that you should watch because it shows your story, which is fantastic. But yeah, I was reading the comments below and people were really fixated on your looks.
Oh, really? Do you know what? I'm so happy you had the strength to do that. That's one thing.
Oh, don't do it. somebody was really, really nice and got rid of the stuff that was, you know, probably not so appropriate because the comments were to those saying, can you just look past her looks and focus on what she's done with her life?
Oh, wow, that's great.
I know. Somebody's really kind of managed you there, which is really good.
Thank you. Thank you for doing
that. But I appreciate that they did that because people have this tendency to want to say, oh, gosh, how could she have done this? And that's why I wanted you to go into your story. So you went from this field trip and then you went into being not doing well in math.
Oh, no.
How did that change?
Oh.
Who changed that? How did you – what did you do?
It's so fascinating. I was failing mathematics and I would fail it, then have to take it over. And then I'd fail it, then have to take it over. And I just falsely accepted the opposite of excellence.
The opposite of excellence.
I falsely accepted
the opposite
of excellence. And it was so fascinating because I was in school and I was at the Hamilton Performing Arts Academy and I was training. I loved always performing and I loved acting and singing and dancing. And so I was actually training to be a performer. And my mother said, think about something else. Think about mathematics or English or studying that when you go to college, not performing. And I'm like, why? I love performing, right? And so those her words stuck in my head. And then in 11th grade, I had a teacher, Mr. Provencio, and he was, and I talk about this in my TED Talk, reprogramming your brain to overcome fear. And when I did that, I was in this class, and I share in the TED Talk how I was in this class, and he offered people the opportunity to come and study for their AP calculus test. And it was like, I ended up having him in 11th grade and later on in 12th grade. And I really had a great rapport with the teacher because he really cared. And so he said, anyone who wants to come and study for their AP calculus exam, I will come in, volunteer my time for an hour each day for 30 days over the winter break. And I knew I needed to go because I didn't have anyone to help me. It's not like we had money for tutors and anything else like that. And I wanted to at least complete the class that I was going through. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go because I'm sure everybody else is going to go, right? And so this is during winter break. There was nobody operating the school buses. So I had to take the at the time it was the RTD, which is now the Metro, mm-hmm. the Metro in Los Angeles. And it was $1.35. And I didn't even have $1.35 to catch the bus. And there was this kind attendant, gas station attendant, that knew every single day I was catching the bus to school. And he would loan me $1.35 each way just to get there. And I got there, and I remember sitting down with him, and the teacher was there, and I looked around the room. No one else showed up. It was just me. And I thought to myself, oh, this is amazing. I have, like, free tutoring. And it is through that 30-day experience where I had the opportunity to see that I was actually smart. It is that I realized that the only thing that was stopping me was myself, and it was the fear that I had to get rid of.
You figured that out on your own, that it was your fear?
It was my fear. It was my fear, and I had to get rid of it. And that's the reason why I wrote the book Mathophobia, is I realized that there are so many people like myself that had such a fear of mathematics that it just stopped them from excelling in all the areas of their life, and they didn't even realize it.
I just want you to dive into that for a second. How did you identify it as your fear? Where did you – because anybody else would have said, I'm not smart or something like that. Where did you get – where did fear show up? How?
It's so great you asked that question. I remember sitting next to the teacher, and he says, you can do this. Mm. And I thought, why do I think I can't? Mm. And that's when I realized I had to get rid of my own fear.
You're going to make me cry. I don't know why. I just think it's so beautiful that you were able to identify that. When you were how old?
I was 16 at the time.
And you had accepted support people gave you. You were able to show up, which is more than most people can say. Showing up is 80% of the solution, I've always heard. For you, in your case, it was like
99% of the time.
You showed up.
Well, I realized that if I didn't show up, I was never going to change the hell that I was experiencing. Mm-hmm. I was going to do anything and everything appropriately.
It was your way out.
To change my life. Mm-hmm. I had to show up. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't show up, I couldn't point the finger at anyone else except myself.
And so that got you into college?
What got me into college was my friend's parents. They showed me how to fill out the college paperwork. My mother didn't have an education at the time, and so that was part of the issue. She didn't have an education.
She didn't know how to lead you through the system.
No, yeah. And she said, honey, I'm going to put you in the schools where they'll be able to help you, but you're going to have to find it out on your own because I can't do that for you. You're going to have to find out. And so literally I made friends with my friend's parents, and there was like times I would stay after school with them. And I'm like, can you show me how to fill out this form for college? And so they knew that I didn't have money. They knew that I didn't have sometimes food to eat at home. And I just asked them, can you help me? And it was because of their help that I found out how to fill out the scholarship applications out, the I went to Cal State Northridge, and I was so thankful I went there and studied mathematics. And then when I went to Cal State Northridge, I had this three wonderful people.
Yeah.
And I love California State Northridge so much so that my experience there was so monumental that I created scholarships for some of the students in the STEM programs when they're going back doing the same thing I did.
So you gave back.
Yeah. And I'm very thankful for that, because had it not been for people helping me to get to where I am, and me deciding to actually follow through, there's a two parts of the equation. I would not have been able to help launch.
You know, your book is about math phobia and how people have math phobias, but you have a different relationship with numbers, don't you?
They tell stories to me.
They don't change, do they?
Numbers always tell you the truth.
Yep.
And that's what I love so much about mathematics. And I am so thankful that you picked that up.
I can see that totally, yeah.
It would always told me the truth. When everything always wasn't clear, when there wasn't any boundaries in dysfunctional situations when I was going through it, what I really enjoyed is that the mathematics always had an answer. And no matter how you approached it, it was consistent. Mm-hmm. And no matter how you approached it, you were always going to get the correct result if you followed the rules and the foundations that existed in the mathematics itself.
That is an amazing – if I looked at math that way, then that would have changed for me. It was only just foreign language to me. And if I had that relationship with math, it would have changed the course of it for me. So then how did that passion take you into JPL? Where did you start? NASA.
I worked at the age of 21. I was recruited by the Boeing Company. And the Boeing Company they worked on government projects. And so it is through the Boeing Company that I worked for NASA.
Recruited. You had to apply.
Yeah, I applied.
School?
I applied right after graduation, and it was so fascinating because how I got the Boeing job is that one of my friends started working there, and I was just so concerned about being able to take care of my health with health insurance after graduation, and I thought to myself, well, I've got to go and pay to go to the doctor now. I've got to get health insurance, and I remember thinking, well, what are the resources that offer health insurance? I'm like, well, I could get a full-time job. I could do this, and I said, well, let me start looking at full-time jobs, and so the job I got was for the Boeing Company at first, and it was first when I first started in there, it was like an accounting job where I used statistics to look at how the accounting was going to be changed and how we need to make sure that we were saving money in certain areas. And how I became a rocket scientist is that I went to graduate school at the same time, and I was taking night classes, and I could not go to the tutoring on campus because there was no it just wasn't open by the time I got off work. And so I looked around the campus, and there was only two people on the campus of 3,000 people that knew the type of work I was doing. And it was advanced level of applied statistics.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, there was only two other people doing it out of 3,000 people. So I found them, and one of the men, he had so much overwork that he was there for late hours just trying to finish it because he had no help. And I looked to him and I said, I was told to come to you because you understand this. And could you answer a couple of questions I have in my graduate school work? And he answered the question. And I looked over at his desk and he had piles of work. And I asked him, well, what is it that you're doing? And just my curiosity, yes, he said, well, I'm doing this. And it was the exact same thing that I was learning in graduate school. And I said, will you help me understand? And my 20-year-old young self, I looked at him. And I said, will you help me understand what's going on in this mathematics and if there's any way I can help you?
Uh-huh.
And he said, yes. And he ended up being my mentor. And he was a rocket scientist. And it was through working and helping him on the projects that a couple months later I got the information from executives that said, we'd like you to transfer over to this new group and be a propulsion scientist, which was the official term as rocket scientist.
So you asked and you opened your eyes and you looked for where the opening and the possibilities were.
I looked at, honestly, the only thing I really cared about is understanding how the numbers worked. There were numbers. I was reading a book, but what does it look like in real life? And that curiosity of wanting to understand how numbers represent the real world and how there's a relationship to this different dimension is what opened up that door. It was my curiosity to find out mm-hmm. how on earth are these two seemingly unrelated things one.
Not many people look at math that way. But you also had your eyes open for everything else. You not knowing specifically, like, I'm sure you might have had a goal to want to be a rocket scientist, but without knowing that was where you were going to be with that path laid out for you, you discovered it along the way.
I discovered it along the way. And what I also recognized is, now, many people don't see it the same way, but that's what I love doing, is showing this. For me, I see mathematics and spirituality as being a completely one.
Explain. Yeah.
I see there being a direct relationship mathematically to how this other world that we do not completely know works. Just like how mathematics represents things that's happening here on Earth, I truly believe mathematics represents things that happen in heaven that we do not completely understand yet. And so I really, truly enjoy recognizing how mathematics and spirituality kind of leads in the same direction.
Right before you said that, I wanted to ask you, when you were that six-year-old girl and you were looking at that picture of the scientists and this beautiful rocket ship, did anything in your body tell you you've been here before?
I'm a firm believer that we always experience deja vu, and that's what I call it, deja vu. And in my newest study of how I'm using mathematics to actually represent, before I used mathematics to represent how we could launch, but now I'm actually using mathematics to represent how our brain remaps itself with thought. And so what I'm really appreciative of is that I've defined the new side of the brain. We usually think of the brain as being the left side and the right side. The left side is being very logical. The right side is being very artistic. And then I've defined a center, which I call the faith sector of the tria brain. Tria meaning three-sided brain, tria mm-hmm. brain. And so I'm a firm believer that this part of our system, we have a natural intuitive part to us that maps the scientific, the feeling, and the spiritual side of knowing. And the reason why I say that is that when I worked with the scientists, they were brilliant. And they used what I call the faith sector of the brain, which was they could see a future before anything ever existed. And these scientists were so brilliant at it. They would literally see something in their brain. And their job was to, one, decide and have that feeling in their system that they were going to bring it into existence. And then they had to find the science to match with what it is that they saw. So when I witnessed that close up, and I saw after someone's vision, a couple years later, having a gigantic rocket engine that could literally have pumps that could take an Olympic-sized swimming pool's water out within 5 seconds. When I saw someone's imagination turn into that, that's when I realized there's a link here. There's a link between this world that exists that we can't see, only in our imagination, or what we think our imagination, or deja vu. And there is a direct link of how we can actually manifest it and create it here on this earth. But it requires us to fully understand the power of what we bring to the situation, and that's our brain power.
You're speaking my language now. That is my whole work. But I wanted to ask you, when you – I saw Hidden Figures and I just got a glimpse into what it must be like there. And they did show that in the movie where it had to be created in the brain, in the mind, and in intuition first, and then it could be created on the physical rocket ship.
Yes.
That's what you saw?
Yes. Every single scientist has done this. They have to envision – Before any pen goes to paper, before anything is created, they have to envision what it is that they're going to do.
Isn't that true for life?
That is in everyone's life, all of us. And that was the biggest lesson that I saw, is that sometimes you have to sit back and observe and question what is the road that you are to take.
So you would look at this, and you actually got to work on the physical rocket ship.
Oh, gosh. Those things are huge.
Must be. I saw the TED Talk, and you're tiny, standing in front of this giant.
Oh, my God, yes.
And you're
yes.
touching the every single pipe, and everything has a specific purpose, right?
Oh, yeah. When I was in the mission control, it was called the ROSC, which was the rocket. It was the what was it called exactly? It was the Rocketdyne Operations Support Center, and so we called it the ROSC, and it was supported mission control. So that's how we supported mission control. And I remember sitting in that room, and my job was to know where over 1,000 welds were at each location. And it was like this engine was like this human body. You know how like there's surgeons in a room and there's like like brain surgery, if you will. There's a surgeon in a room that knows every part of the brain, how it's supposed to operate and know how it's supposed to move. That was what we were doing. We had to know how all of this moved. And in a split moment of time, if something went wrong, we had to figure out how to fix it. And it was like what the information that would have to flow through you at such a quick rate to be able to solve this. I think that is when my brain was just like on fire, because you'd have to know all this stuff and have it operating in such a fast way in order to make sure that gigantic
firing together wire. Together, that's for sure.
Rocket engine would go up.
So. Let me ask you about the women aspect, being a female in that environment that looks predominantly male. Is it a little bit more balanced now, or is it still predominantly male?
Oh, still predominantly male. Back when I started, it's amazing. I started nearly 20 years ago, and so I'm 40 now, and I started when I was 21. And I would go into a room, and there would be around 200 people, and I was often the only woman. Maybe there would be one other woman. So if we look at that ratio, 200 people, let's say the best situation, to 1% of the top rocket scientists I can't speak for anything else. I can just speak about what I witnessed firsthand was 1%.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's the best way of putting it, as documented 1%. And now I would say it's a little better. It may be 5 to 10. Maybe 5.
What was that experience like for you, being 1%, being a woman, handling this level of responsibility in mathematics and everything? Did you experience a severe amount of discrimination? Did you have a lot of, was there sexism? Was there all the things that you would expect back in the late 90s?
Oh, I expected. I ran across situations that I wasn't expecting.
I'm sure.
And it was not the easiest thing being a woman.
Right.
And I would be lying if I told you that it was easy. And the first day, and I write about this in the Huffington Post article when I did the movie review for Hidden Figures, because when I first went to go see Hidden Figures, I was actually scared to go see it because I didn't want to relive what I went through. And there was parts which were exciting, and there were parts that were, when I worked there, was very dreadful. And I'm just glad because I had the courage to go. And when I saw the movie and I saw Katherine Johnson's life and the other individuals, their true story, I started crying because I realized that their life was my life. And it was like my life was on film. And I felt so much better. It was so odd. That was the response. I felt so much better because I thought I was not alone.
Yes.
I went through experiences that they went through, and they could relate, and I could relate, and I had to make sure other people could relate. And so when I went home, I ended up staying up until 7 a.m. in the morning to write that article and place it on the Huffington Post, because I was just so moved by what I saw. And what I experienced was, I was a woman, and I had three groups of people I would encounter. I had the group of people that were very supportive, where they saw I was a woman and young, and then a person of color. So three things that were completely diversifying that environment.
Yes. Yeah.
So they saw this, and they said, well, let's do anything we can to help her. Now, they had no idea about my background. They had no idea how I came from poverty. They had no clue about any of this. They knew that I just was there. And I never really shared that with anybody that was there. I just knew I had to do that work.
So you never used that as a story or your label?
No, never, never, mm-hmm. never. Because I was there to do a job, and I was going to be the best at it I could be.
Uh-huh.
And there was always – it was a very competitive environment. The second group of people I encountered were people who would push your buttons to see an emotional response so they could say, look, I think a man can handle this better.
Oh.
So that, and
I
wasn't,
read that. And, yeah.
It wasn't a whole lot of people. It was just a couple, but it was, it's like the, like any type of child on a school play yard, and they have a couple of bullies that are there that will do anything possible just to discourage people who just
try
want to
make
play.
You cry and say that you're weak because you're a woman. And,
or because you're showing emotion, which feelings are brilliant, brilliant, powerful parts to us as women, as and to people in general. And for people to not value that as much as the logic is not true, because the feeling is just as important as the logical side, that's just as important as the spiritual side that people have. So then I encountered that second group. And then the third group of people are the people that didn't care.
Nice.
they were just like on the fence. Either way, they just were not. They didn't see the
anything.
They didn't see, they were just there to get the work done, get it is and what it is. And they were kind of oblivious to the challenges that were faced. So I had that dynamic working. And so I looked at it as I was a person always to work hard, obviously, because I was a person that was determined to change my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so the type of help that I received when I was 16 was the same help I looked for when I was 21. Who are the individuals that will help me understand how this works? And I thought about it. All right. I know how this feels. I know the signs of people who are truly interested in helping me, because my main goal was, how can I help other people? How can I take this information and be a contribution so I can make something better?
With
that information, and when we think of ourselves as being a change maker, as a person who is able to change the way that people think, feel, or see the world by what it is that we do and what we believe and how we respond, that's when we have the biggest change. And it's what Gandhi said, you must be the change that you wish to see in the world.
Yes.
You must decide to be that for yourself. And for myself, I said, I'm going to be this change. I'm going to do such a great job and figure out a way in which I can help this situation. And that's what's going to be my focus. I'm going to every single day choose to wake up and face this environment no matter what challenges I face. And that, it was not easy.
Uh-huh.
It was not easy, but it was worth it.
What does your family have to say about this environment, the whole situation?
May I give some advice to your listeners?
You have it already? I'm making notes. Yes, please.
If you are ever in a situation with family members that do not support you with what you do.
I had a feeling.
Find other people who do. What I realize is that we each are given a choice in life on what it is that we want to do and fulfill and carry out.
Wow.
Some people have the courage to do it and some people do not. And these can be the closest people to you, even blood relatives. And it is not your job to figure out why they're not doing it. It's your job to carry out with what it is that you are doing no matter what.
Preach. You are right. Jealousy comes up. Competition. Yeah.
And for me, I'm very fortunate. I've always had a mother that has always supported me.
Seems like it.
And I'm very thankful for her help. And I have... I'm a very spiritual person in addition to being very scientific, and I let that go. I'm like, God, you know what's best for everybody, and I don't.
Yeah.
And what I choose to do is something that is in my path, and I can't expect someone to follow my footsteps or be doing the same thing I'm doing because they may have a different path. So what my job is to carry out my own life, and perhaps my life will change theirs.
So before the movie came out, what were you doing? You were teaching as a university professor.
Mm-hmm.
Did the programs end at NASA? Space programs that you were involved in?
The space program ended at NASA. It was on its way out. The space shuttle program retired in 2011.
It was a sad day.
Yes.
I know.
Remember Endeavor when it was flying around? Oh, that was like
so sad.
Wonderful.
It was good, but yeah.
I was so happy to see everyone outside celebrating that we had a space program. In 2011, the space shuttle program ended. But I left maybe a year or two before that. It was shortly before that. And I was actually recruited into a banking institution. It was a banking industry. Yeah, surprisingly. And I had to chuckle about this because this is so just not me. But anyway, they offered like twice as much as what I was making as a scientist. And I said, sure, I'll use mathematics to go over to the banking industry. Well, when I got over there, I realized I was not a banker. My passion was science. I loved science. I loved anything and everything that had to do with science, whether it be chemistry, mathematics, biology, neuroscience, physics, kinesiology.
Uh-huh.
Anything that had to do with science is something that I drank up and I loved. And I just was not passionate about seeing number crunching when it came to money, which is people do that and they do that very well. That was not my passion. My passion was science. And so I actually left that and went into part-time teaching. And when I went into part-time teaching as a mathematics professor, I'm very thankful. I love teaching. And one of my roles is a part-time mathematics professor over at Pasadena City College. And I really, really have enjoyed helping the students. And it's through helping the students I realized there were so many people that had the mathematics fear. Is one of the reasons why I wrote
phobia.
The book. It is a phobia. And that was the reason why I wrote the book Mathophobia, because there's so many people that needed to overcome that mathematics fear. And I'm thankful. I've trained great people that are now working for the Center of Disease Control, who are now lawyers. This is like so amazing. And I look back and people who are training in are in neuroscience now. And I think to myself, it's because you took the math and you decided not to be scared of it anymore. And I'm so happy about that. And so before Hidden Figures was out, what I was doing is teaching and writing the books and touring. And so what it's with this movie now that's out, it's now a new highlight. It's now a new, deeper understanding of the challenges that I faced. Catherine Johnson faced.
Right.
And now I'm very fortunate because I have the opportunity to speak more across the United States and across the globe about,
I was gonna ask you about that.
What we can do next.
Do you speak? Do you inspire young women? Do you go to schools? How do you teach not only to inspire women and young girls about science and math, but then also how to get over the phobia?
Oh, yes, yes. I'm very thankful. Just this last Saturday, I spoke for the Council of Black Educators. It was COBED. It was for 800 people.
Fantastic.
And it was a standing ovation. I was so honored. And then I spoke at another campus earlier. I've spoken at many different campuses and universities and corporate organizations. I have a speaking agency that sends me out. And I do a Brain Power Unleashing Tour. And it's a system.
What is that?
It's so fascinating. I recognize that we have the power to change any type of situation with our brain power.
Yes.
But we don't know how to use it. It's like having a Ferrari and you don't necessarily know how to change its
right.
shifting gear.
Right.
You're like, you have this beautiful car in your driveway. You have no idea how to like start it up or drive it because you don't know how to shift it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
So our brains are like the exact same way. We have this beautiful piece of organ machinery that is inside of our head. And we have no idea how powerful our thoughts are in reshaping our own brain, in creating something in our life, as well as giving the thoughts out to the world. We have no idea how powerful we are as human beings with using our thoughts.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited to share this system with people so they understand how to reset their intention. So many times in life when we go through situations, we allow our attention, we mistake goals for intentions. The mm-hmm. goal is, okay, I'm just going to finish this class or I'm just going to get this degree. Okay, great. But what are you going to do with it? What is your intention? How are you going to help yourself and other people with what it is that you do? And so the intention is how we change and how we use our own life to be a benefit to ourselves and other people. And for me, my intention when I was 6 years old was to be a rocket scientist, but it got convoluted and changed and all warped off with all that drama I went through. And it is when I studied mathematics and graduated from mathematics. That was the goal, to graduate with my degree, but the intention was to use that degree to help change science and help change the world.
Yeah.
And that is the intention, and that I'm carrying out with what it is I do today. So that first step is knowing the intention, and there's actually four other steps in this process.
So you use the brain power, the power of the mind, but you look at it in a scientific way. Because there's a lot of people that talk about the power of intention, and Wayne Dyer was my mentor, and he but you use it in a scientific way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I loved Wayne Dyer. Yeah. Oh, I still love his
work.
He's
still here.
Oh yeah. For a quick second, Wayne Dyer, he did the last series, right before his death, he did these video series. And I'm so thankful he did those.
Right, the courses.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so thankful he did that, because it's like his last gift to the world.
I remember when he was recording those, and we were in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'm such a fan of his work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you carry it on.
Thank you.
Carry it on.
I look at it as mathematical. The spiritual world is mathematical, and it's specifically chaotic. And there's a branch of mathematics called chaos theory.
Right.
And so chaos theory, what it does is it shows us that we have two different outcomes. We can either grow or we could stall.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these different aspects that happen in life. And we have no idea how they will all add together to one of these states.
Right.
We'll either have a state in which we will become stuck and we'll have to start over or not move forward. Or we'll have a state in which at the end we'll get to a place where that will even become like a jumping ground towards something else. And that accelerates us. So we have one of these two locations in the universe. In mathematics, in chaos theory, that's what it talks about. We can either gravitate towards one or gravitate towards the other. And so in mathematics, there's a way to determine which direction you'll go based on the momentum or which pathway you've been on right before. So when you get really close to success, there's a reasoning in mathematics that says you're pulled into it. So whatever success is to you, whether it is becoming the radio host of a wonderful show here, or if it is going back to school, or if you are a person that is wanting to start your own business, whatever that success is, when you have that in your intention, that your brain naturally picks up the mathematical path towards that location.
Vibration, is that another word for frequency?
How could I describe this? It is, there's set pathways that exist to multiple places. When we set our intention, we internally will know the pathway that will get us there. And that's that deja vu part.
Fascinating. So when we set an intention, we line up with the set mathematical pathway that exists to get us there.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Yeah. I totally get it. I can see it. Yeah. That is great. And that's what Brain Power Unleashed is.
That is our Brain Power Unleashed.
I get it.
Exactly.
I get it.
For example, if you want to go to Disneyland, you have to know you want to go to Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
So you have to, all right, so what are different ways I can get there? You look on a GPS, I can take the 5 freeway, or if you're in another state, okay, what planes do I have to take to get there?
You have this great example of, okay, so I have a rocket ship. It needs to go to space. How many different ways do I need to get there?
Well, that's how we get to Mars, through chaos theory. We cannot get to Mars in the traditional way. We have to find the pathway that will fling us there, because there's no way we would have enough gas to carry it. Like, so the same way that we get to Mars is the same way our thoughts get to the answer. When we have a certain destination in mind, our thoughts fling us there.
I love that. Fling us to Mars without gas.
Break it down where people can understand it.
Well, I want to break down what we just talked about, because I want to tell people that you are amazing. Olympia Lapointe is my guest. And you can look up her TED Talk. And also, I mean, what we talked, she's got a book out called Math-a-Phobia. But really what we've talked about and outlined here is I take voracious notes during interviews.
I love how you do
everything.
This.
I love
just
this.
So enjoy sitting here with you. I love your
forever
energy.
I could do this. I mean, not only, and I want our listeners to know that it's not only hard work, but you had to use your resources and get resourceful. You had to want to help others and change people's lives, and you did. You overcame massive obstacles. You understood and understand the power of the mind and how it can overcome matter. You were voraciously curious, which is an amazing quality. You have intuition that you followed as a scientist. You're a woman that is incredibly comfortable feeling her feelings and telling us that we should, and that you looked up against people that are button pushers in your life and overcame them as well. I mean, wow, girl.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I got all that. Now, you're just amazing.
The one thing I would love to share.
Yes?
Your thoughts can pierce through anything.
This is true.
Use them.
Thank you. Thank you. Olympia Lapointe, my friends, thank you so much. If you want to listen to this interview again, you can go to theawareshow.com and we will have it up there for you to have your children listen to. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.